The Department of Public Instruction released new data yesterday showing students in Milwaukee's independent charter and private voucher schools outperformed public school students on some tests.
The data comes from standardized tests and the ACT exam. It's the latest round in a long-running effort to compare the performance of charter, voucher, and public schools.
Joining us now to discuss the news is Alan Borsak, Senior Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School and Education Columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Alan, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about this new data just made public by the DPI yesterday, kind of allowing some compare and contrast between voucher schools, charter, and public schools. What was your take home, first of all, from what you saw in those numbers?
Well, I'm in a kind of a contrary mood, so I think this is politically good news for voucher and charter people, and I'm all in favor of all test scores going higher, but I'm not so sure there's actually all that much to gain by looking at these numbers in terms of sector by sector, charters, vouchers, MPS. I'm much more interested in individual schools.
And let's, before we get too deep into this, I think it's always good to sort out what is voucher, what is charter, what is public. Can you give us the Cliff's Note version of that, Alan?
Yeah, well, that's a tough question, but I'll try. The public schools, Milwaukee Public Schools, is your classic public school system. That doesn't mean they haven't innovated and changed, but publicly funded, employed, teachers are all employed by the school district. Voucher schools are private schools. A very large majority of them in Milwaukee are religious schools, and they get money from the state under a program that's now 26 years old. The first and still, I would argue, the most impactful private school voucher program in the country. There's over 100 schools taking part. Charter schools are a little more complicated to explain. They are not religious. They are publicly funded. They're open to any student who applies. And they are run independent, at least the ones that get all the attention, are run independent of the classic school district, public school district. They're self-governed for the most part, or part of an organization separate from the school district. They are very controversial these days.
And one of the biggest controversies, Alan, and we've talked about this some before, is how do we figure out which one is working better than the other? How do we measure performance of public versus voucher versus charter? And this new data involves a few tests. What kind of tests are we talking about, and how do they work as measures of school success?
Well, that's part of the problem. We're talking about tests that were given almost a year ago, the so-called Badger test, which was a pretty ill-fated major undertaking by the State Department of Public Instruction. They spent several years getting ready for it, and before it ever was actually given, it had been torpedoed, so you'll never see it again. Schools right now are getting ready to do a round of a whole new test, the Forward test, which is from a different vendor, slightly different style of test. So the test itself and the age of the data are questionable. How reliable test scores are is certainly controversial. Personally, I think, and lightning bolts may hit me for saying this, I think they're a pretty good indicator of whether kids in a school can read and do math at the kind of levels you're looking for.
Also included in this data was the ACT exam. Now, this is something that used to be, hey, you're thinking of college, you got to take the ACT. This is a college entrance admissions type of thing. This has changed. We're requiring more people, more kids to take the ACT now, aren't we?
Yeah, I should have made that clear. The Badger test and the Forward test we're talking about are for third through eighth graders. Mm-hmm. High school students are now taking the ACT. Just about every 11th grader in the state is taking them, and that's being used as the accountability measure, replacing the 10th grade test that was used for many years here. The ACT is certainly was set up as a college admission test, but it's being used now as an accountability test to figure out how kids are doing on a broader basis.
Talking to Alan Borsak from Marquette Law School and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at new data out from the DPI that people are trying to use to compare charter versus voucher versus public schools. This is mostly in Milwaukee, but also, Alan, beyond a little bit, the state is expanding the voucher schools. It was Milwaukee, then it was Milwaukee and Racine. What do we have now?
Well, you've got a very matured program in Milwaukee. 27,000 kids are in voucher schools. You have a growing program in Racine. It's now in, let me stop and think, it's fourth year, I believe. And that's growing, and it's about, as I recall, about 10% of the publicly funded students in the Racine United School District are going to school on vouchers. And you have just the beginnings of what could turn out to be a large statewide program. The legislature a year ago lifted a lot of the restrictions on its growth and where vouchers can be used, but that's actually too small to draw too many conclusions from at this point.
Well, I want to throw in some numbers. Let's look at these Badger exams. And you pointed out some people have called this, I think, a fiasco, the way this was rolled out and went. But looking at the numbers, 27% of students in the voucher program in Milwaukee proficient or above in English, compared to 25.6% of all MPS public school students in Milwaukee. It's not a huge difference. Is this something people are seeing as a significant difference?
Well, like I said, I'm inclined to think to some degree these results are more important for what they say politically, you know, that they give the voucher and charter movements a little more momentum, and we're looking to a new state budget a year from now. What they mean educationally, I'd say two things. Number one, to me, all the scores are too low. You're still talking about a quarter of the kids in the city who are not reading at a proficient or advanced level, so-called grade level. And even if you say that bar is set very high and lower it to the basic category, it's still a very large number of kids who aren't reading, doing language arts, and doing math at a level. And that's true in vouchers, charters, and MPS. So the differences just melt away before the bigger picture. And second, within all of those streams, you have some schools that are scoring way higher, sometimes because they have better socioeconomic student bodies and such, but sometimes because they're doing a better job. And you have schools that are doing particularly poorly within the voucher movement. I could point to schools with wildly different results, or widely, I guess, is better than wild. And so to talk about voucher schools overall is kind of hard to talk about MPS overall. You've got some star schools. You've got a lot of schools that are really struggling. You got a lot of kids in the city who are going to schools in all of these streams who are really not doing that well and who have so many needs educationally and non-educationally. And I think we need to keep our eye on the big picture and come up with creative thinking about how to make fresh runs at the big picture.
One of the arguments for various kinds of school choice, whether you're talking vouchers or charters, was the idea that, okay, we're going to allow parents to choose. That's going to generate competition. That's going to mean that all of these schools have to up their games. The public schools will have to improve their services to keep from losing students to the vouchers and charters. Those schools are going to have to perform higher if they want to draw kids from the public schools. Have we seen any evidence that parental choice has lifted all boats?
You could debate that question a lot and find some evidence. It's certainly popular. If it's a question, do people like it? Yes, people like it. Every indicator, every survey, every just enrollment pattern I see shows that it's popular. There are no kids going to charter or voucher schools in Milwaukee, and we're talking to more than about 40,000 kids now who were assigned to do that. It really is a choice world. So it's popular. But is it working educationally? You could debate that for a long time, and the real answer is, as I said before, everyone needs to help, and the differences, if any, are really pretty small.
Right, so maybe we could argue about if this voucher is doing better than that public or whatever, but maybe choice hasn't been the magic wand that people were hoping it would be. It wasn't the cure for what's ailing education in a place like Milwaukee.
That's the most important lesson that's come out of Milwaukee. I mean, if you go back to 1991, when the program was being launched, you had education advocates who were talking about, you know, and I'm not exaggerating the language here, but we've been looking for the magic button, and we're going to see it now in Milwaukee. There's one famous book that uses the word panacea. It wasn't that. A lot of the voucher schools are excellent. Some of them are, the ones that are really, really terrible, most of those have died out by now. But the mediocrity is still a big problem in that stream of schools, as it is in MPS. If anybody's policing their house more effectively, I think it's the charter sector these days. And the weak charter schools, there's two of them closing at the as charter schools at the end of this year. One of them is going to go back to the voucher program. The charter sector is doing a better job of policing its schools and dealing with quality, and that's really important to pay attention to.
We're talking to Alan Borsuk about new data on student performance in public, charter, and voucher schools.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Does this news surprise you? Do you have a child in either charter or public schools and have a personal story to share? You can let us know what you think at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our discussion about new data that shows Milwaukee's independent charter and private voucher schools are outperforming their public school equivalents on recent standardized tests.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you part of this story? Do you work at or do you have a kid at a public school, voucher school, charter school? How do you see them all playing out? What's the answer? Is there a way to improve performance, outcomes for the actual kids in any or all of these institutions? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Alan Borsuk stays with us. He's been writing on education at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a good long time now. We'll go to our callers.
Way too long. Yeah.
We'll go to our callers now with Jim on the line in Plymouth. Jim, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What do you think, Jim?
I'm just wondering, what is the rate of the percentage of students that have special education needs in the voucher and charter schools? And do they talk about how that affects the quality of teaching within those types of schools?
Jim, thanks for that.
Public schools.
Thanks for the call. And Alan, I know this has been a controversial issue too. How does special education fit into all of this?
Well, good question and an important question. The reality, as best as I can judge it, is that the truth lies somewhere in between what the more adamant people on both sides would say. The voucher schools take more special ed kids than they're given credit for. My guess, and there was a study a few years ago that hit this number also, it's overall probably 8 to 10%. But that is, well, and it's not the 1% that some critics point to. But it's not the 20% plus that it's true in MPS overall, and especially in many specific MPS schools that have even higher rates. So MPS has a disproportionate share of special ed kids. I think that's just a fact, and that does have an impact. I don't accept that all special ed kids are not going to do well in school, and some it depends on what their disability is. But overall, those numbers indicate more challenging populations. I think that's just being honest. So MPS has a disproportionate share, and MPS has, as far as I can tell, a disproportionate share of the kids who are maybe not designated as special ed, but who are chronic behavior problems, too. So they get dealt a tougher hand, and that has an impact. But again, a lot of this varies from school to school. There are voucher schools that are very determined to serve special ed kids, and there's others that are eager to not. And the charter schools generally, there's some variation there, but generally they're much more open-minded about taking special ed kids.
Jim, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Alan, we heard from Darlene on Facebook who writes, this money going to voucher schools is every penny taken away from public schools, which if they had the money that went into these private voucher schools, it would enhance the public schools. And she says we wouldn't have two or more separate entities fighting for this money. Long story short, she says the public schools are losing out. How do those resources go from the public schools into these voucher schools, Alan?
Well, once again, that's way it's far more complicated than that, and you can spin the numbers to look at it different ways, and it depends a little bit who you're talking about. If a student who would not be going to a public school is getting public money, that's fresh money. That's one of the real questions about the statewide voucher program. If it's a kid who would be going to a public school, you can make an argument saying who's actually saving the state money because the voucher payments and the charter payments are less than the cost per student of a public school kid. So much depends on the specifics, and the mechanisms vary from Milwaukee to statewide programs. It's bad for any school, and that includes entire public school districts, including Milwaukee, to lose students. Declining enrollment is usually a bad sign, and cost does not go down so simply. You lose a kid and you lose having to pay for that kid. It's not so simple. You got a lot of fixed costs. You got a lot of incremental matters that are hard to reduce spending on. So declining enrollment is bad for any school, and that is hitting a number of public schools. But it's a really complicated financial equation.
We're talking schools, charter, voucher, public. Recent test scores out for the DPI. Yesterday, in fact, Alan Borsak is with us from Marquette University Law School, education columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Go back to our callers now with Al on the line in Madison. Al, hi.
Hi. I was just curious about how many teachers we might have lost due to retirement or just leaving the state from collective bargaining, and if it affected public schools more one-sided than charter schools and such.
Al, thanks for that call. So different impacts of Act 10 on public schools versus the charters and the vouchers, Alan.
I'm glad to say I'm aware of two studies going on currently. One of them quite neutral and one of them from a more of a partisan group that are trying to really pin down more carefully what the impact of Act 10 has been. And I'm really eager to see the outcome of that work. Overall, it's pretty clear. I mean, the enrollment in teacher training programs around the state, university schools of education and such, is down all across the state. Some degree it's down nationwide, but it's, I think, more so here. A lot of the evidence is anecdotal, but ACT nationally put out a study recently that fewer college students are interested in going into teaching. So it's a tough picture out there. I was at an event last week where the term teacher pipeline, bringing people into the world of teaching, came up, and all the educators in the room immediately perked up, you know, that this is a really big issue. So it's a concern, and my guess is it's going to become bigger as time passes.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Jeff on the line from Minnesota. Jeff, hi.
Hey. Hey, my question is the difference in rules, you know, relative to charter schools and public schools. The laws are different, who you can hire, you know, who can do the work, you know, how the game is played. And how do you square that?
Are you talking as far as, Jeff, employees, unions, things like that, certification, things like that?
Well, not necessarily unions, but, you know, for a charter school, you don't have to have an education degree and a license.
Gotcha. So different standards for teachers. Alan, how does that work in public versus charter versus voucher schools?
Well, charter schools do their own hiring, so they don't go through a central office like a school district school would. Some use that to great advantage and insist that having control over selecting their staff is a key to the quality of their programs and have demonstrated how that can be done well. Others haven't done it so well. The laws on discrimination and that kind of stuff are not really any different for any school. You still can't discriminate on the basis of most things. A religious school can hire people to teach religion classes who are from that religion, but that makes sense. But they can't discriminate in hiring general studies teachers. At least it's not so simple. As far as qualifications of teachers, I mean, some of the qualifications for public school teachers are being eased up too. Generally in charter schools, I believe it's correct that you have to have a college degree, but you don't necessarily, I think, and almost all the charter schools I know require a state teacher's license, but there is a little more latitude, and you don't necessarily have to have a specialty license to teach in that specialty, say, art or math or something like that, especially in a small school. A lot of the teachers teach multiple subjects.
Jeff, thanks for that call. We'll go next.
I'm talking about at high school level.
Sure, sure. We'll go next to Tim in Milwaukee. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, this is obviously, the voucher school movement is obviously a political movement. And it's a political movement to weaken the public school system and use it as a, finally, as just sort of a dumping ground for the kids that are extremely hard to teach or have handicaps or disabilities. And part of the reason is they don't like, the conservative forces do not like the ideas that are taught in the public school. And I'm talking about things like conservation, environmentalism, and inclusion.
Tim, thanks for the call. So, Alan, we hear this from critics of school choice and things like that, that it's, in effect, an assault on the public schools.
Well, I'm going to pass on giving a judgment on that. Certainly there's politics involved, and in Wisconsin the Republicans have been very much pro-school choice, and the Democrats have generally been anti-school choice. Even in those ranks, there's some differences of opinions. So, yeah, there's no question that a lot of this is political, but I don't think it's quite, you know, so simple to reach a conclusion. I know people in the Republican ranks who are actually really out to help kids. They're convinced of that. I'm convinced of that. They're much more benign and positive than some people give them credit for. And the same I would say on the public school side, that they're more willing to help just kids. You know, one of the things that we've learned in Milwaukee is that sector by sector, it just doesn't make that much difference when it comes to quality, and that the focus more and more just ought to be on what can be done that helps kids. So when I see a school that's really working well for kids, especially low-income and minority kids, I don't honestly care whether it's an MPS or charter or voucher. I'm just really eager for such schools to flourish and to see more of them.
Good place to leave it, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
That's Alan Borsig, Senior Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School, education columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.